There's a drive into left field. That one going to stay fair. Pierce is watching, and this one is fair and gone. Back on top go the Red Sox. Steve Pierce launches one out of here to make it 3-2 Boston.
He came in and got an awkward swing on Bogarts. Threw a really, really good pitch. I mean, if you look where the pitch is, you know, it's really hard to get that ball airborne and hit it as far as Pierce did. And then Devers, we had Sip ready. I left the bottom of the order, keeping Moreland and Holt on the bench. Sip's really good against righties. But to start the inning, we love the matchup.
That was A.J. Hinch explaining the sixth inning move to take out Dallas Keuchel, bring in Joe Smith. Astros fall, unfortunately, 8-2 in game number three. Ask McLean anything at the top of the hour. John is brought to you by Horn Solutions. John, you were at the game. Your main impressions, thoughts this morning are what?
When Keuchel got roughed up in the first inning, I thought, here we go again. I'd been to like three of his starts this year when he got roughed up in the first inning, but he got out of it with two. And then when they tied it 2-2, you know, it was such a buzz. But then Pierce's home run reminded me of Luis Pujols' home run off of Brad Ledge. It just took the air out of the stadium. And because it was so, he hit it so hard.
I think it was a majestic 458.
Yeah, down the left field line.
Yeah.
So that ball still would have been going if the roof had been open. And Pierce, of course, being a former Astro like Uvalde, and I was stunned because the Astros have been so great at scoring late inning runs as they did in the first inning. But then these last two games, the Red Sox relievers did a tremendous job of shutting them down. And then who would have thunk, you know, Jackie Bradley Jr., 7 RBIs in 2 games on a bloop 3-run double and then a grand slam. They didn't need it to win the game, but still.
Jackie Bradley, and he's a guy that's been kind of high and low for them this year, too.
The ninth hole hitter.
Yeah. So, you know what? I'm glad you brought up Brad Lidge, because Mike gets angry when people bring up Brad Lidge with that. I think you're forgetting that element of it, Mike, was just the grandeur of the home run itself. It's not just the, well, Mike gets upset because he always has to point out, and it's fair that Brad Lidge went on to have a productive career and pitched in a World Series after that. It wasn't like it was the end. But in terms of the moment itself, it's how big a home run it was, I think.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And I don't want to make my opinion on that seem like it's out of place. And basically to reset that, I'm annoyed that people saying, was that Osuna's Brad Lidge moment? Because A, it's game three of the ALCS. That was to clinch the National League in 2005. Yeah. It was a big moment. It's one of the biggest moments probably in baseball of the last 20 years. My only point with that is, A, if last night was some big moment for Osuna, then you traded for the wrong guy. Then you traded for the wrong closer, A. And B, I just want to point out that while that basically ensured that Brad Lidge, and this sometimes happens in baseball, could never really return in a productive fashion he went on to a nice career.
Plus, I'm being a complete moron anyway, because it was Joe Smith, not versus Roberto.
And I was in the stands for the Pujols home run, too. And the similarities, they were hit so hard. And it just, all of a sudden, it was silence. And I don't remember who wrote it, and I don't even remember when I read about it, they said who wrote it, but Pujols' home run, a guy wrote it, was so quiet, you could hear a pin it drop.
Yes.
And that's exactly the way it was. And that's what I thought last night. People are just, it sucked out the air from the stadium because he just waylaid it.
That's by the way, that might be one of the best tweaking of an old saying that I've ever heard, because it's two what parts. It? So quiet you can hear a pennant drop, because you can't have like a pennant's especially quiet compared to
even
a pen.
More quiet.
And then obviously that you've got the meaning of the pennant there. Who wrote that?
I don't know. Everybody was talking about it.
It's a great line.
Take credit for it yourself.
Get that person on the. Yeah, if it's not copyrighted yet, just go ahead and copyright it. That's what Bob Kraft would do.
It's like Under a Blue-Gray Sky, the Four Horsemen wrote again.
The Red Sox and the Astros, since we're talking about sayings here, the Red Sox and the Patriots have that in common. I feel like their slogan writing
Do damage.
What the hell is that? Like, all these slogans are really forced now because everybody has to have one to try to sell apparel.
Never settle solid.
Yeah, never settle solid. Do damage.
Do damage. I don't understand it at all.
But I feel like a writing professor would give you a C minus for that. Like, do damage.
I don't even think it would get that. That's an F. Like, what? What are you talking about? Do damage.
Vandalize the opposition? You know what they did? They did damage to the Astros. Ooh.
They did, unfortunately. Let's go to the phones right now. This is an old school baseball guy. I'm sure he's going to have a unique take on this. 713-572-4610. Bill on Mad Radio. Bill, good morning. Go ahead.
Old school? You don't even know how old I am.
This is true, but I imagine you're not 30 years old.
You sound like you're 64.
Close. I wanted to know last night, Alex Cora had such a good reputation. If he's in our dugout, what does he do that creates, or what did he do that created the opportunity for him to become a big league manager? What do they find out when you're in the dugout in terms of your leadership and your baseball skill?
Well, I guess I would answer that by saying,
same
I imagine
Aaron Boone.
Yeah, and Boone was in the broadcast, but I guess just overall vibe. And we talked to
Steve
Lance about
Kerr.
This. Yeah, you talked about Lance about this on Thursday. Just the overall, like, you have somebody on your staff who looks like he would be a manager. I know that's like answering the question with the same thing, but you got the idea.
I think a lot of it, and I would say the same thing probably goes into Bill O'Brien and why he got hired by Bill Belichick. And there are a lot of things that go into it aside from your actual experience on the job. You know, the first time AJ Hinch got his job in Arizona, it was a huge experiment, and people had the same questions. It didn't work out there, but you get the sense a lot of it was just because baseball wasn't ready for that kind of manager yet. I think with Alex Cora, for one, you want a guy like with AJ Hinch that the players respond to, and that you feel like you can get through adversity. And the players in Houston all absolutely loved him. And then I would imagine beyond that, it's conversations that you have with the front office. Like, is this a guy that understands the analytics, but also can relate to the players? And that's what everybody wants right now in baseball, is a guy that can understand the analytics, but still relate to the players. And then beyond that, obviously the decisions and everything. I guess you don't really find out until you get into the playoffs exactly how good you are at managing your bullpen in the playoffs.
I think the relating to the players thing is big. I mean, Cora's not that far removed from having played, and you have someone like that who has been around for, first off, just this era of baseball, but also was playing not that long ago. I think it helps. I mean, that's probably why the Yankees thought that with Aaron Boone as well. I mean, we're talking about less than 20 years since he was last playing at a high level. And same thing with A.J. Hinch. I mean, you can look up on YouTube A.J. Hinch hitting a home run from the last 20 years as
True.
Well. It's on YouTube. It's pretty funny to watch.
John, the guy who wrote So Quiet You Could Hear a Pennant Drop was Mike Downey from the L.A. Times.
Yeah, he's one of the all-time great. Yeah. Columns. Also, about a bench coach like Cora, and Astros could be losing a current bench coach too. Word gets around among players, coaches, managers, general managers, and then, of course, they have agents calling around trying to get them jobs and spreading the word. So that baseball players have a lot of time to communicate and batting practice while you're in town. If you've got somebody you really like, you talk about it, talk him up, word spreads, and
yeah.
People pay attention to it.
Well, like Mike Vrabel, you know, okay, what did Mike Vrabel do to earn his status as head coaching candidate? I think it was a career of, you know, him, for one, telling people he wanted to be a head football coach, and then just demonstrating his intelligence,
vibe.
His plan. I guess just having a plan is a big thing with a lot of these guys. Vrabel, by the way, is Vrabel going to win Coach of the Year this year, John McClain? Because after four games, he was the best coach who'd ever lived. I couldn't believe how incredible he was. Now people aren't singing that tune.
They'd have scored a touchdown for him to win that.
Oh, they're
wow.
Just 11 sacks. Nobody thought that the Texans' offensive line from last year could be outdone, and yet the Titans and Marcus Mariota, I don't know if you saw that game or not. They could not pick up a blitz, and Mariota couldn't adjust to a blitz to save their lives.
It was at 8 of the 11 where Mariota's fault for holding the ball too long.
Yeah.
Are people, because you're out in Nashville all the time, are people starting to be out on Mariota? Where are they right now?
When he bounced back, you know, he was hurt early. Then he bounced back and looked really good, and they beat Philadelphia. So they're 3-1.
Great win.
He's back. He's healthy. Everything's good. And in the last two, he's just been awful. And then, as a lot of quarterbacks do, you hesitate. You know, you hesitate in the NFL, boom, you get pulverized, as Deshaun Watson's finding out. So they go to London to play the Chargers, and having not scored a touchdown in the last two games. And I believe in that last game, they had like 106 yards.
Boy, the Chargers go, they what they did, they played the Browns, And then they just stayed in Cleveland.
Yep.
You got to be careful, guys. Don't get in too much trouble in Cleveland. And then they're flying to London. So Tennessee does have, I'm guessing, the travel advantage there. They don't have to travel through as many time zones. They haven't been away from home for 9 days.
And that's
well, I mean, 14 days by that point.
And that's the Chargers giving up the home game, right?
I don't know. All I know is the Chargers have beaten four teams that are 16-17-1.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably the most underrated team in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
Their only losses, I believe, are Kansas City and the Rams.
So those are lost to the two good ones and beat the four bad ones, which is what you're supposed to do.
True.
Chargers have beat some good teams. The Philadelphia Eagles and the Houston Texans have the two easiest schedules in the league. That's another thing you have to remember with this 3-3 record. That it's a, not only did you got gifted two of these victories by a Frank Reich and a Nathan Peterman.
And a Jason Garrett, arguably.
And a Jason Garrett, arguably. And they were versus bad teams. It's a hallucination of a 3-3 record.
John, real quick, give me like 35 seconds or so on this. Is tonight a must-win game for the Astros?
Of course, you can't be 3-1 in your last game at home. They have to win this game. What was the stat? 75% of the teams that win the third game win this series?
Yes. Well, I think it's when they win game three on the road in a best of seven in baseball, they win 75%. That does not bode well, but hopefully the Astros are in the 25%.